This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. All right, it's been a while since I've chatted. Well, I shouldn't say it's been a while, because we tend to connect a couple times a year over the phone when we're driving to and from our hunts throughout the U.S. But it's been a while since we've shook hands and have met in person. But today's guest here on the How to Hunt Turkey podcast is my buddy John Mulligan. John, how we doing, dude?
I am doing fantastic, man. Had a super awesome leg day this morning, and I'm just glad it's over with, really. So,
yeah. Hey, I got a leg day coming up, but not how you think. I have a knee replacement surgery coming up in 3 weeks.
What'd you do?
Yeah. Dude, I just am getting old, and I have bone contact.
I slept wrong. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. No, just, years of doing dumb shit and being like sports and kickboxing and doing jumping off shit and walking on places I probably shouldn't walk. And here we are.
I tore my MCL on New Year's Eve.
Nice.
That was fun. It was they call it a grade 2 MCL tear. But yeah. Peptides, and I was good to go in about 4.5 weeks.
There you go. Yeah, I blew my ACL. Let's see, this would have been my junior year of high school. I blew my ACL and MCL.
That was back when you were playing for Polk High, number 44?
No. Nope. This is back in the day where I was trying to balance working out and drinking as many Busch Lights as I possibly could.
It's a tough feat for a lot of men.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. All right. So this is the How to Hunt Turkey podcast. And so obviously we're going to talk about turkey, and you have a unique story that we're going to get into here in a second. But before we get into the topic of conversation today, I want to send a huge shout out to our partner over at Montana Decoys. Montana actually has a brand new lineup of turkey hunting decoys. I just pulled them out of the box a couple days ago. Very compact. Throw them in the pack. You pull them out. You undo a strap. You basically shake them like like right before you fold a basket of towels, you shake them out and then you fold them up. And so that's how Montana decoys are. They come with a little stake, put it in the ground, and you got a decoy out. For their entire lineup, go visit montanadecoys.com. All right, John.
Yes, sir.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Lexington, Kentucky, more or less. Just a little south of there, a little town called Jessamine County.
Okay.
Right in bourbon country, Woodford Reserve and Wild Turkey and all those places were like 5 miles down the road.
Yeah.
And I've talked about this a little bit in the past. Hunting was not me as a kid. I wish it was, but my dad didn't hunt, and we didn't even have whitetails in central Kentucky when I was a kid. So it wasn't until I moved to northern Kentucky and I started my police career that there was turkeys and whitetails that were plentiful. So that's how I got into it. So I didn't even start hunting until I was like 23 years old.
Okay. 23 years old. And what did you do? What did you do? Go after first, turkeys or whitetails?
Whitetails. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's probably the route a lot of people, take, but, that are brand new to it. I mean, I knew nothing, even though I'm from Kentucky. I've never eaten a possum. I've never, I've never skinned squirrels. Like, you know, I didn't grow up that way. You know what I mean?
Gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah. So I went after whitetails, but it's funny because one of the guys I was a cop with, he was from Texas. And, you know, in Texas, if you live there, I think it's like four whitetail tags a year, four turkey tags a year. You know, you can almost hunt year round.
Right.
You can hunt killer whales if you want to in some parts of Texas. But if the fence is tall enough, but like, so he was like, dude, let's get into whitetail hunting. And I'm like, I don't know shit about it. Like, I know nothing. So I'm about to be 48 years old. I went to the public library in Boone County, Kentucky, and I checked out books on like whitetail 101 and whitetail strategies. And, and I have since gone back and purchased all of those old books that I originally taught myself how to hunt with.
Yeah.
And so that's how we got started, just started whitetails. And then, you know, the next season it was like, you mean I got to wait all the way till the fall to hunt again? Yep. I'm like, oh, spring, we can hunt turkeys. So really my, you know, inception of turkey hunting was really just finding something to do in the spring for hunting. Cause I didn't want to wait a whole year. And you know, and it also keeps you sharp. It keeps you shooting your bow, keeps you shooting a shotgun. It keeps you in the woods and all that kind of stuff. And I was just, man, when I got my first taste of hunting and I was just obsessed. I wanted to find something to hunt year round.
Year round. Yep. Absolutely. Yep. And I think that's a common story that, especially when you're not a kid and you get into it. Like we were, I mean, I was a kid. I was 12, 13 years old when I started hunting, but it was never anything serious. I was never forced to go. And then, you know, about 26 years old is when I first started taking it a lot more serious. And then we get hooked because we make the decision, not anybody else. Right. So, when did turkey step into the arena?
Let's see, probably not until around, gosh, I had probably been chasing whitetails for about 6 or 7 years. Mm-hmm. And then I got into turkeys, and I want to say the first turkey that I killed would have been somewhere around 2010, 2011. Okay. I think that's when I first, I shot my, and that was with a shotgun. That was the one and only turkey that I had shot with a shotgun. And then from that point on, I'm like, well, I got this mastered. I'm basically a professional turkey hunter.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a pro. I've killed one. And that actually makes a lot of sense in today's TikTok world. If you kill one animal, you're pretty much a pro. Mm-hmm. But I shot one turkey and I was like, man, I got to try it with a bow now.
Yeah.
And that was not fruitful.
No.
For several years. Mm-hmm. I wounded a lot of turkeys.
Yeah. Why did you decide to do the, like, cause let's be honest, going in there and pulling a trigger on a shotgun is a little bit easier. You don't have to draw back. You don't have to, why was the bow so intriguing to you?
I think because with my police career, shooting guns, and whether it be scopes or iron sights or EOTech and that type of stuff, I was doing that every day anyways. So I didn't really have, I couldn't make the argument that I got to keep my firearms proficiency up.
Yeah.
But I had already gotten into archery, and so it just gave me another reason to keep shooting my bow and you know, getting my equipment better, me getting better, repetition. So I thought, well, let's just stick with the bow for everything, you know, moving forward.
Yeah. So you just said, I don't even want a gun anymore. I just want to go turkey hunting with a bow. All right,
yeah, I mean, I carried a gun every day for a job. So I was like, I want to hunt with a bow.
Nice. And then when did that become, like, when did you start getting successful, like, on a year-to-year basis? And I tell you what, why don't you talk us through that portion of it, but also talk us through the portion of, like, because you can't just go and some guys do it. They go right into the woods, no blind, anything like that. They draw back and they're able to kill turkeys. I tried it a couple times. I sucked so bad at it that I have not picked up a bow to go turkey hunting since.
Yeah.
So walk us through what's the strategy differences for bow versus gun.
Yeah, I mean, so about the time that I really got into archery is also when I was starting to film some hunts. And so naturally, I set up in a pop-up blind because I thought, man, this is a lot easier. There's more movement, you know what I mean, with pulling a bow back and that type of stuff. And plus, you know, I have a tripod and I got a camera because, you know, I'm going to be a hunting celebrity someday. And so I started filming all my crap and I thought, well, this is easier. I can kind of hide in a pop-up blind, put some decoys out. But I was so dumb that I thought a turkey was just like a balloon. As long as I popped the balloon, they were going to die.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, that's not going to work. They have really small vitals. So, you know, that changed a little bit, but hey, that was kind of a win-win because, you know, aim small, miss small.
Yeah.
So it really got me a little more proficient, you know, in that. And really it was about the time that I linked up with all of you guys at White Knuckle that's when I was really, really like, okay, I want to take this real serious, you know, with my archery and stuff like that. But yeah, the blind and the decoys, and still to this day, that is my preferred go-to. I have killed them out in the open. Mm-hmm. And dude, it's tough. I mean, I was counting it up the other day. I've now killed 50 turkeys with a bow, and I've killed 2 with a shotgun. And the 2 that I have killed with a bow that were not in a blind, I mean, dude, those were just pure luck. It wasn't luck, skill. Yeah, it was just, I got in such an advantageous spot that, you know, when a turkey's making a beeline towards the decoy and I was just happened to be perpendicular to them. So by the time they broke my plane, then I was able to draw. And that strategy is highly effective, but it's also terrain dictates the ability to do that as well.
Yeah, that's a fact. Okay. Now, so you've kind of led us into this. You've killed a lot of turkeys with a bow. You've traveled the country. You are a successful archer who has completed their Grand Slam with a bow. Talk to me a little bit about going after, like, all of a sudden, let me back up a second. I've never had the thought, I want to complete a Grand Slam. I've never had the thought saying anything about, like, I want to complete a super slam with my bow with elk and bighorn sheep and shit like that. What made you want to go out and try to accomplish the North American Slam with a bow?
So a couple of reasons. Number one, I'm too poor for the sheep.
Yep.
So that was priority number one. Number two, I started a company called Bourbon Barrel Calls and making turkey calls out of bourbon barrel heads. And, you know, I'm from Kentucky and Lord knows I drank plenty of bourbon and makers back in the day. But so having that affinity that I wanted to create a company kind of based around that. And so when I launched the company, I launched it in November of 2019. And everybody's like, why'd you launch a company in the fall of 19? Well, Primos and Nightingale and all those guys are spending tons of money in the spring, but they're not spending any marketing dollars in the fall. So I'm poor. And I thought, I have no marketing budget to launch this company. So let's start it. So started it in the fall. And then over the winter, I thought, man, what can I do to really create this brand and create some hype around this brand? Because I really feel like I have a really good turkey call. And so around February or early March, I went on a podcast and like a dumb shit, I make the announcement that I'm the spring of 2020. I am going to go for a single season archery Grand Slam. And I put it out there in the universe, you know, and then COVID hit. And I was like, and they started, and if anybody remembers, they started shutting down all these states to non-resident hunting because they were convinced we were all going to get COVID in the woods. And so the states that I was going to go to, I was going to go to Nebraska because I could get a Merriam and a Rio in the same state. whether you go north or south in the state, mm-hmm. you know, and some people call them hybrids, you know, whatever. One's got cream color feathers, one's got white. It's a Rio, it's a Merriam, you know what I mean? In the words of Theo Vaughn, you can argue that on your own time, you know. but also I was going to go to Kentucky for an Eastern because I've got a million places to turkey hunt in Kentucky. I kind of feel like I had that state kind of figured out and those farms figured out. Well, Nebraska and Kentucky just happen to be two states that they shut down for non-resident hunting. So my wife goes, like, dude, I just pull the plug on it. I mean, yeah, you told everybody you were going to do it, but you can't control this plandemic, you know, that's going on right now. And just bail, you know, no one's going to call you a pussy. So I was like, if there's a will, there's a way. So I said, screw it. I went to Florida. I shot my turkey down there in just around Bunnell, south of Bunnell, Florida. So I got that bird out of the way. And then I went to Texas and I shot my Rio down in Texas. And then I went to the Black Hills and I shot my Merriam, which was super rad to hunt Merriams in the Black Hills. That's one of my favorite hunts of all time. And then I was on my way. And technically at that point, I had completed a Grand Slam, but I wanted to do a single season Grand Slam, right?
Right.
So on my way back to Kentucky or to Iowa, I called my buddy Billy C. And I said, dude, I'm not going to make it. I got to crash at your house. He lives up around Tama, Ankeny area. And I said, dude, there's no way I can make it to my house. I'm falling asleep at the wheel. And he's like, well, just crash here on the couch. So I pulled into his house at like 3 a.m. Now I had done the Texas and the Black Hills and back to Iowa. This is all in a matter of like 5 days. Mm-hmm. I'm dead to the world. I was keeping 5 hour and monster in business at this point. And I pull in, I crash on his couch and I'm about to fall asleep. And he goes, hey dude, I was thinking, if we wake up in like an hour and a half, we can make it to my dad's farm and we can just go ahead and knock this shit out right now. So I'm like, yeah, dude, wake me up and, you know, let me get a couple hours. So Billy wakes me up at like 5 a.m. I sit in the passenger seat. I sleep all the way to his dad's farm. And he's like, I already know where the birds are. I've got a blind set up. We're going to get this done. And then at like 8 o'clock in the morning, I shot the Eastern and had my official single season archery Grand Slam done. Now, like I said, this all happened. The three birds happened in 5 days.
Yeah.
But the Florida season opens so early. I shot that bird like 3.5 weeks prior.
Yeah.
And I was waiting on another season to open up basically. So, I mean, in total, I did it in 5 days of hunting, but it took 32 yeah. calendar days. So now, you know, it turns out from NWTF, according to them, I was the only person to complete a single season slam that year with any weapon. And Turkey Country magazine did a big write-up on it, and I'm in my office, I'm looking at my Grand Slam certificate with all my coins and stuff like that that they presented to me.
Nice.
And whatnot. So that was pretty cool. And then, you know, again, it gave a huge launching pad for Bourbon Barrel calls that I can say this one pot call, and I used the same pot call on all four birds. Of course we filmed it and it was a part of my, you know, part of my show and stuff like that. So
yeah,
that was the reason. I mean, one, it was a challenge. I wanted to do it, and why not go ahead and do it now when I can promote my company, you know, as well. Like I said, COVID really kind of boogered stuff up and it made it a lot tougher for me, but nonetheless, it was a cool accomplishment and I'm glad I did it.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. All right. So one season you did 4 turkeys in 4 different states. You kind of touched there a little bit on the Black Hills hunt. What made that South Dakota hunt so fun?
The scenery.
Yeah.
I mean, I shot those birds not even 5 minutes away from Rushmore.
Okay.
Maybe 3 miles away from Rushmore, yeah. You know, pretty close to there. So I was able to go visit that from the roadway. Because of COVID, the parks were closed. I couldn't get inside, but I was able to photograph some stuff. And there's a cool little turn off in the Black Hills. There's a little park and ride kind of a place. And you're really like, you're right underneath George Washington's chin.
Oh, nice.
It's pretty cool. Yeah. So even with an iPhone, like you can literally shoot a picture up his nostril.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So it's neat. And so I was able to, you know, get some cool pictures, but you know, coming from Kentucky and Iowa, like we don't get to see mountains like that all the time.
Right.
And so I think just the scenery of that alone was cool. And I, in my opinion, I think Easterns are the funnest bird for me to hunt because they're so loud. I mean, they gobble so thunderous, you know, but the Merriam, in my opinion, is the prettiest of the birds, you know, with the.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
I sold my car in Carvana last night.
Well, that's cool.
No, you don't understand. It went perfectly. Real offer, down to the penny. They're picking it up tomorrow. Nothing went wrong.
So, what's the problem?
That is the problem. Nothing in my life goes as smoothly. I'm waiting for the catch.
Maybe there's no catch.
That's exactly what a catch would want me to think.
Wow, you need to relax.
I need to knock on wood. Do we have wood? Is this table wood?
I think it's laminate.
Okay, yeah, that's good. That's close enough.
Car selling without a catch. Sell your car today on Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
White tips.
Yeah. Yeah. A bird you don't hear much about, and I'm thinking it's because, well, everybody talks about the Osceolas because it's only found in Florida, right?
Yeah.
But no one really ever talks about the Rio. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. Maybe it's overlooked a little bit. You know, again, they have a different color and it's that creamy color, but it's not white. It's not bright white. You know what I mean? So I don't know if that has something to do with it, but yeah, I mean, I think the Merriam, because they're predominantly found in more of your mountainous areas out west,
that
makes that significant. Yeah, like you said, the Osceola, like that's cool, in my opinion, only because there's one place to do it at.
Right.
If there was multiple places, I think that would be the same as a Rio. It'd kind of be overlooked a little bit.
Yeah. All right. Outside of that, what'd you learn about wild turkey from that hunt, from that experience?
That taught me volume and cadence. Osceolas are so aggressive. In my opinion, that's the easiest bird to hunt. You can flash a fan, and I'm not saying reap them. I'm just talking about flash a fan up in the air from 400 yards away, and we had birds charging at us. They are just super aggressive birds. the Rios, it was kind of like I was, you could get them fired up, but then you had to kind of calm them back down. It's like the perfect mixtape. You know what I mean? You gotta yeah. lay down some Marvin Gaye, and then you gotta get cold with them a little bit. And then, the Miriams, you almost had to just be, it was on turkey time, you know, like you just kind of call at them. You know, like I called at Birds and it took them 20 minutes to show up. Yeah. Then when they showed up, they were hot and aggressive, but it was on their, it was kind of on their time. And then, you know, of course, you know, if you try to call at Miriams the way that we call at Easterns, you're going to scare, in my opinion, you're going to scare them to the next mountain ridge.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you use decoys at all in any of these?
I did. Yeah. I used decoys on, let's see. I used decoys on all of them, actually.
Okay.
The Osceola was super cool because we actually had one of my buddies was holding a decoy, and that was one of the birds that I shot in the open. And was able to, we found some, it was an old chimney structure. There used to be a house there, and everything was torn down, but they had left the base of the chimney or fireplace. And I was able to belly crawl and use that as kind of a makeshift kind of a blind, but same scenario. He was past me. So I called the bird past me and the bird was so focused on him and he's just on the ground holding, not a fan. He's just holding a decoy and, laying as flat as he could. And once that bird broke that plane, you know, then I was able to draw and shoot. And we actually got some cool pictures of it as well.
Oh, nice.
No one used them, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. What about Bourbon Barrel? What made you want to start a turkey call company?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know our history with Wicked, and I kind of liked having a product. And I kind of missed that a little bit. So because I love turkey hunting and you know, my thing also, and, you know, some people know I also have a small marketing company as well. And I've always been a proponent of the backstory can be just as important as the product. Mm-hmm. You know, if a company stands for something or has a good story to it. And I kind of wanted to test that theory with Bourbon Barrel. You know, turkeys prefer to roost in white oak trees, and to be an actual Kentucky bourbon, it has to be in a white oak barrel.
Yeah.
So when I launched the company, I also launched it with a company, with an organization called the White Oak Initiative. And the reason for that is my degree is in horticulture, and the rate of deforestation that's happening is exceeding the rate of growth to maturity of white oaks. So if we don't start planting more white oaks, then we're going to run into a problem. Yeah. Every turkey call company in the world is cutting down trees, or they're using plastic or some other material that is they're creating something synthetic, or like I said, they're cutting down trees. I'm taking reclaimed bourbon barrels that already soaked in bourbon for 10, 15, 12 years, 7 years, and they're done. They've already served their purpose. So I'm not cutting down any trees to make bourbon barrel calls. Now, I'm not a hippie. I'm not a tree hugger per se, but if there's a way that we can offset some of that, and creating more habitat and not attacking more habitat, you know, for wildlife, then sure, why not? It's a, you know, it's a win-win. It's a plus one situation.
Yeah. Well, and then there's that story, right? It's like,
yeah,
bourbon barrel calls made from recycled bourbon barrels.
There you
go. Why not? Why not? Yep. Out of curiosity, how many turkey calls can you make out of a bourbon barrel?
12.
12. Oh, so it's just the lid.
Yep. Because the staves would be the sides of they're too thin.
Okay.
So I need at least an inch thickness to make my calls. And so the only thing that I can use is the lids.
Okay. All right. And do you make all of those by hand?
Yeah.
Yeah. By hand.
Yep. Every single turkey call that's ever, so I'm up to 2,700 calls, that we've shipped out so far. And every single call I have handmade myself. Every striker is hand stamped by me and me only. No human has ever stamped a striker. And that's been something that I've been very set in stone about, was that every striker was going to be stamped by me.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. Again, and in, you know, as well as I do, in today's world of trying to make things as cheap as humanly possible, and taking away the story that you were talking about, nobody gives a shit about that stuff anymore. And so working with that initiative and then knowing that, you know, it's like there's only one person to blame if things go wrong, and that's you. Right.
Yeah.
And so that's pretty badass, man.
I appreciate it. Well, and I don't know if you're working with any turkey call companies or any pot call companies in particular. Even if you're working with another turkey call and it's not a pot call, I'll make this announcement. If you're interested right now, I'll make a turkey call and for you to give away to one of your listeners.
Yeah, man, that'd be awesome. We'll make an announcement about that right now, but then we'll figure out a way to do it. For maybe the next couple episodes that we release. So that's pretty badass, man. And we appreciate that. So outside of that, 12 calls per barrel is it the top and the bottom or just the top?
Yeah, the top and bottom are universal. So okay. I can get 12 out of each.
Okay, 12 out of each. So 24 per barrel. And then what do you do? Where does the glass come from, or the plastic or whatever it is, the striking component?
Yep. So the glass, the slate, the aluminum, the copper, you know, different striking surfaces.
Yep.
Those, I do have a company that I purchased those from. I haven't gotten to the level of making my own aluminum or copper yet. the tweakers could probably help me out with the copper, but,
right.
Yeah. So I haven't, yeah. So that stuff I do purchase. But any of the wood components and all assembly, you know, is all done for me. But yeah, there's different companies out there that supply that kind of stuff, and glass cutters. You just give them the specs that you need, and you know, stuff like that, and they can cut it for you. And like on our custom calls, those are all a black anodized soundboard that's under the glass.
Yeah,
and we can take a photo off of an iPhone. We can do whatever, custom logos. I mean, like we did 150 turkey calls for Leupold. We made 126. I know it's an odd number that we made for John Dudley and Knock On, and, Joe Rogan has one of my calls, nice. Davis Love the Third, Harry Connick Jr. So we've got some famous people, you know, some celebrities, that, you know, have our calls. And, so it's fun, and we've created another line of, like, we do groomsmen gifts, like for the best man and groomsmen. So we do kind of a wedding thing, because who needs another damn flask?
Exactly.
Yeah. So we've done a lot of those. We do a lot of corporate calls. You know, they'll give them out as corporate presents, you know, at Christmas time, or, you know, stuff like that. And so that's kind of the custom stuff has kind of been my niche.
Yeah.
But, it's fun. I mean, and I'm always looking at different stuff. Like, we just released a ceramic call the other day that is so overlooked. It's extremely versatile, and you can run it when it's wet as well. So yeah, I mean, we've got some cool stuff. And then we also do some gag stuff, you know, like one year, remember those games where it had the little BB in it? And you know, so I made one of those where I drilled a divot in the soundboard and put a BB inside the turkey call. So I'm like, you're in the turkey woods and you're bored waiting on the turkey. You got a game to play, you know, right on your turkey call.
That's pretty sweet. That's pretty sweet.
So we've done that kind of tchotchke type stuff and whatnot. So I can do whatever I want to do with it. You know, it obviously is not publicly owned, and I'm usually the type of person that's been known to go, oh shit, I shouldn't have said that publicly. but I don't care. You know what I mean? Like that's me, and that's always been me. I'm going to say whatever's on the top of my mind, and I run the company the same way.
Yeah. So what kind of, like, research did you do? Because obviously, you know, you look at, I'm on your website right now and they look good, right? They look really good. But at the same time, how did you know what a turkey call was supposed to sound like? Like, how did you do the quote unquote research and development so they actually work too?
So there's two parts of that. The first part is because I was into turkey hunting, a lot of us, we have a lot of pot calls. I mean, I bought plastic ones. I'd go to a trade show. Like in the Wicked days, it was inevitable that there would be a turkey call company near us, you know, and either they'd give us one or I'd buy one, you know? And so I had all these turkey calls and there was some that I liked the sound and some I didn't like the sound. And I basically just started taking these old turkey calls and busting them open and looking at the guts of them. So I'm like, okay, I understand this. And I have a cousin back home that was a lathe guy. He makes like wooden bowls and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I had these very rudimentary sketches and I said, hey, you know, I need the lip to be this. I need this to be this. And I need a shelf, you know, for the soundboard to sit on and kind of create that echo chamber, so to speak. And he turned a couple for me and I played with them a little bit. And then I started putting together a couple. And this is, so the first part was legitimate research. I was really studying what everybody else was doing and teaching myself, how do you make that sound? What makes them loud? And then I started playing with the different materials. And here's where the luck part came in. I wanted to use white oak strikers to go with the theme of everything, you know, white oak barrels. So I'm like, well, let's use a white oak striker. So I called a company that supplies strikers in wholesale. And I said, does anybody use a white oak striker? And he said, there is not a single turkey call company that uses a white oak striker. And I thought, well, man, this would be really cool if it works. As luck would have it, the first design, the first sketch is what is still being made today. Just pure luck. And the only thing I did was just using my deaf ass ears as what sounded good. And then I sent a couple out to some buddies in different areas. And they're like, dude, this is the most versatile call I've ever used in my life. How many years of research did you put into this? And I'm like, I don't know, about 17 minutes, maybe 18 minutes. It just was pure luck, pure luck. I can't hear you.
Right. I blew my nose. I blew my nose and I forgot to take it off mute. Oh. Anyway, anybody who knows anything about business will tell you that you'd rather be lucky than good.
100%.
Anytime, right? And so it's awesome that it works like that. Now there's probably some other people out there who hear that and go, you know, like,
yeah.
Who cares? You got an awesome sounding, a turkey call that brings them in, man.
Well, and then here's the other funny part about this. Like, okay, we can make two or three a day on a lathe by hand, right? So I was like, I'm going to have to partner with a CNC guy that can take my blanks and he can cut my design, you know what I mean, into these pots. If I'm ever going to scale this business and actually make any money, you know? I partnered up with a guy and he's like, well, you need like the 3D CAD guys will know that I'm butchering this, but he's like, you need a DXF file or whatever. And that's apparently the code for like the extension for the CAD program. And I'm like, I don't know what that is, but I had a buddy that was an engineer at Toyota. So I called him on his free time, or maybe he did it on the clock for Toyota. I don't know. He doesn't work there anymore, so he can't really get in trouble, I guess. But he's the one that actually wrote my program from my napkin sketch drawings. And so I can say that my turkey calls have been Toyota engineered.
There you go.
They're guaranteed for 400,000 miles.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. That's hilarious. And the ability and your entire slam was done off that as well.
Yes. All right. Guaranteed to 400,000 strikes.
That's awesome.
Without changing the oil.
Right. Yep. And then you can pass it down to your kids.
Exactly.
There you go. And still feel really good about it.
Yeah. I'm like, it's good for another 100, bro. Just check the oil level.
Yep. So do you have any more plans? It's funny
how that works.
Yeah. Do you have any more plans to go in and like do another slam or do anything like that?
Yeah. So the very next year in 21, I said, you know what? I'm going to be the first person to ever repeat a single season archery slam. And I went to Florida, got that bird day one. I went to Texas, shot that bird day two. I went to the Black Hill or went, I came back home and I shot an Eastern here in Iowa. And then I went and I said, you know what, because the Black Hills meant so much to me the first time around, I want that to be the final bird for the 2 year consecutive slam.
Yeah.
I went to the Black Hills. I was hunting pretty close to private and was right on the fire, you know, the service line. And I shot a bird. And like anybody who has shot a turkey with a bow, sometimes they flip-flop and die right there. Sometimes they run off and die. Yep. This bird ran on to private. And I already knew going in that it's not a state that you're allowed to pursue downed animal. So I run down the fire service line to the street. I'm on the street. I run down the street, run up the driveway. I get to the driveway of the house. I see a bunch of diesel Volvos, old school diesel Volvos. Clue number one. Clue number two, I see Biden Harris stickers on the door.
Okay.
Or at least Biden at the time. And then I see no soliciting. And I'm like, shit. So I'm banging on the door anyways. The worst they can tell me is to get fucked, you know?
Yeah.
And then the next door neighbor comes over and he's like, hey, of course I'm wearing camo and I have a bow in my hand. And, like an idiot, I didn't leave my bow. I carried it with me. So I'm sure that was very welcoming, but no one was home. And he's like, man, they hate hunters. They moved here from California and they are not going to let you on their property to hunt. I'm like, I'm not looking to hunt. There's a dead bird in their backyard. I just need to go get my dead bird.
Yeah.
And he's like, I don't even know how to get a hold of them. He's like, I don't like them. They're super liberal. So I called the game warden for that area. And I said, can you go get the bird? Can you escort me to, I'm like, I'm looking at the dead bird in the backyard. And he's like, I can't do that. So I'm like, you gotta be shitting me. Like there's a dead animal in their backyard. I just want to go get my dead bird, you know?
Yeah.
And, but I can't. So I thought, you know what? This is day one. I've got 11 more days to hunt out here before I got to head home. I'll find another bird. Well, me and my buddy, we hunted our asses off for 11 days and could not fire up another bird into bow range. And that was the end of the season. Tucked my tail and went home. By not being willing to just cross the line. And I mean, we're talking 20 yards.
So you could go see pick it. Up.
Oh, you I could see it. Yeah. I could have hooked it with a damn fishing rod and probably drug it back.
Yeah, man, those laws are crazy because I had to do the same thing with a mule deer in South Dakota a handful of years ago where, man, I smoked him.
Yeah.
And I eventually found his bed where he was bedding, but by the time I had to go locate landowners and didn't get permission until the next morning, he had already moved on. And so who knows where this buck died. But I smoked him and I watched him bleed out, jumped a fence, went down into a little drainage, and I had to go ask for permission. And unfortunately, that's the rules of certain states. You can't go get your game. So, I remember you telling me that, dude. That sucks, man.
Yeah, it was horrible. And it was such a, and I remember my buddy, he's one of my best friends. He was running a camera and he's like, all right. We get back to the hotel that night and he's like, so I'm going to borrow your truck and I'm going to go get something to eat and you don't need to come with me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, we're not.
And
he's like,
that.
he's like, I'll put on a ski mask. And I said, no, dude, no, I'm not taking a chance. And you know how this industry is, you know.
Yeah. The second you do something wrong, someone's going to jump on you about it.
Yeah. So I just said, man, we got plenty of time.
Even though it was probably, and this is where it gets weird, you know, this is a completely different conversation, but even though it would have been probably the right thing to do,
yeah,
is to jump the fence and quickly grab it and come back, you still have to follow the rules. And the second a guy like you or me goes and does that, we're then bait for people to talk shit on. And
oh, they love
look
it.
At this trespasser, or poacher, whatever the case is. So.
Yeah,
I feel you.
Yeah. So that was a shame, but you know, I have to be careful because I'm genuinely upset that I wasn't able to retrieve a downed animal. Yeah. You know, there's a couple of turkey breasts, you know, that just rotted, but I'm sure, you know, by the end of the day, a coyote came in and got them or something. But nonetheless, at the time, I was so angry because I was still in that I can be the first person to do a consecutive archery. And I, when that thought kind of set in, I'm like, whoa, John, this is not why you got into this in the first place. Yeah. You know, like don't let your mind go there because that's a bad place to be. But I mean, admittedly, that's where my head went at first is I was seeing potential dollar signs and fame or whatever that might brand deals that might come out of it. And I was like, whoa, stop that. Yeah. Don't do that.
Yeah. You're doing it because you love turkey hunting.
Yep.
Absolutely. Well, that's cool, man. You very unique story. Bourbon Barrel Turkey Calls seems to be doing very well from a you know, like a customized standpoint or a customization standpoint.
It's fun. I don't have a Mercedes, but it's okay.
you make the Mercedes of turkey calls.
That's right.
Basically.
That's right. Yeah, it's very bougie.
Now, do you have any more plans in the future to try a Grand Slam again?
I think so. Yeah. You know, maybe the next one will be with a shotgun only, you know, I don't know. I like challenges and, you know, I'll reference that movie Troy with Brad Pitt. And somebody was like, he's like, what, you're not going to do this? And he's like, no. And he's like, and that's why no one will remember your name.
Yep.
I like difficult shit and I've always been that way. You know, when I look at like my own personal accomplishments, the single season archery Grand Slam is up there. But also like hunts in Saskatchewan when it's negative 39.
Yeah.
Cause anytime I mention that to anybody, they're like, F that. Like, no, like that doesn't even sound like fun. And in my head, I say to myself, and that's why no one will remember your name, you know, because I just like hard shit and it doesn't even have to be. And if you think about it, I never once said it was a world record. It was a booner. Yeah. None of that comes into play. I just like difficult shit, win or lose.
Yeah.
I like to test myself like that.
There you go. Well, Mr. Mulligan, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to talk to us about your call company, your Grand Slam that you accomplished. And, man, good luck this upcoming spring, because I know you'll be out there chasing them. And
scaring them, if nothing else.
Exactly. So do us a favor and let us know where we can find Bourbon Barrel Calls.
Yeah, Bourbon Barrel GameCalls.com. Online, we just revamped our website a few months ago and it turned out really good. It's amazing what you can get done on, from people in India. It turned out really good and full customization on Bourbon Barrel Calls. We love it. I think this year I might bring back my grunt tubes. We, a couple years ago, I did a limited run of grunt tubes that were made from bourbon barrel, heads as well. And, I thought it was kind of like, oh, it's a Me Too product, but apparently everybody really likes the sound of them. Cool. So, you know, when influencers say, oh man, I've been getting blown up every day in my DMs.
Yeah.
Number one, not true. But I really have had a lot of people ask for those grunt tubes. So, anyways, yeah. So I think we might bring those back this fall. And, just like I said, it's a complimentary thing to what I'm doing already. And it's fun to do. You know, they're made right here in my basement of the house. So that's kind of fun. And other than the dust and the noise, my wife puts up with it.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right, John. Well, hey, man, we appreciate your time and good luck this spring.
Dude, thank you very much, man. Same to you. Good luck.